So Stephen Kubacki disappeared in the Michigan Triangle. While the reappearance is fairly unique, there are other stories of people vanishing in mysterious ways. I think it's important to analyze those to make sense of the scope of possibility. We still do not know what happened to Stephen in the time that he was gone and why he came back while others are found dead in a mysterious manner. The footprints leading to the edge of the water are very interesting to me. It really shows just how abruptly he disappeared. One second he was there, and then next, poof, gone. He just blipped out of existence. Hey guys, welcome back to a brand new season of the Haunted Detective Podcast. Did that just go over your head?
Did you say brand new season?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I was just fucking around.
Welcome back to a brand new episode, Kelsey. That's what we meant to say.
Are you okay?
No.
What you guys didn't hear because it got cut out is Pamela almost throwing up because there was a hair in her mouth earlier. So I think it went all the way up to her brain.
I coughed so hard that I coughed out all my brain cells. So that's where we're at today. It's okay.
Anyways, I'm your host, Kelsey Childs, but everyone calls me
the paranormal Sherlock Holmes.
And with me
is your favorite co-host,
best friend
and skeptic of all things paranormal, Pamela J.
Pamela is the world's best friend.
I'm doing a heart. No one can see because they're listening.
Today we're going to be talking about some really creepy disappearances, so tune in, buckle up, grab onto the handrails, don't put your hands or feet outside of the moving vehicle. Fuck! The case file just flew out of the roller coaster, Pamela. You have to go get it.
I'm not. I'm not doing this time.
You gotta jump. I'm not. You gotta do it. Please.
You shot me last week. When
and
I
you're
was
here.
Getting the zombie. No, I
and
was getting the zombie. And
you're
you
fine.
Know what? You know what?
Pamela, just go get the fucking case file.
I am not.
Literally, that's the one job you have. The one job I have. The one job. Can you go get the case? It's down there. Just jump. What's the worst that can happen?
Just jump. Do a flip.
I'll push you out. Go get it.
And up comes a Pamela J. She's going to the edge of the diving board, getting ready to do her quadruple, triple splash extravaganza.
Oh, there she goes. There she goes.
Oh, watch out, watch out.
That's disturbing.
She died.
Someone called the paramedics. Who would have thought that diving onto concrete?
In the arms of an angel. Fly away from here.
May she rest in peace.
That was painfully off tune for a professional singer. Singress.
I don't give a fuck. I'm tired.
A professional singress.
A professional singress. Hang on. You know what's funny? That used to make my mom laugh so hard when I would sing that song.
Can you sing it for real?
Yeah.
Do it.
Okay, wait. wait.
In the arms of an angel, fly away from here.
Still off tune.
In the arms of an angel, hope you find comfort here. You've been pulled from the wreckage.
Donate to the ASPCA today.
Period.
Wait, no, just keep singing in the background, like really quietly. An animal needs your help. It's cold. It's snowing. It's winter time. Adopt a pet or donate today from the SPCA. Definitely not a corporate conglomerate. We love your donations. Bring blankets, bring food. Your next best friend is waiting right around the corner. Don't let them die in the cold. 1-800-555-8652, because 100% of your donations definitely go towards the animals. That's why we have to put this disclaimer here. 1-800-555-852. Your best friend is right around the corner. Anyways, let's talk about missing people. Now that you have the case file, I'm going to rip it out of your dead hands. Oh, she's alive. Oh, someone get the shotgun. I swear I don't fantasize about killing you.
I was like, do you want to just murder me?
I think about just killing you, Pookie. I just want to know what it would look like with your dead lifeless corpse, Pookie. Heart.
Mentally ill, innit?
Was that just the emergency? 911 is here to help you. Call 911 today if your friends are suffering. If they think about jumping off a building or joke about suicide, call 911. We are here to help.
Was that just the emergency?
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit
With
the floor.
With Life Alert, you'll never have to worry about your family. Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. Well, with Life Alert, you can press the button and help will be on its way immediately. Stephen's case raises a lot of questions, almost as many as the bizarre disappearance of five cognitively impaired men on February 4th, 1978. Jack Hewitt, Bill Sterling, Jack Madruga, Ted Weir and Gary Mathias were a range of 24 to 32 years old. They might have all dealt with mild to severe intellectual disabilities, but that didn't mean that their lives weren't as normal comes for men in their situation. The five boys all lived at home with their families and were independent enough to be alone and go on local trips together. Madruga had a license and a car that he used to drive them all around with. The main venture that they went on was playing basketball at the Yuba County Vocational Rehab Center. There was a tournament hosted by the Special Olympics in Sacramento on February 25th that they were all set to compete in. The men were determined to win because of the prize. An all-expenses-paid trip to LA. The night before the competition, they all got into Jack's car and headed to watch a college basketball game 50 miles away in Chico. Like I said before, this was not unusual for them. They made it to the game, and on their way home, someone saw them at a convenience store where they bought candy and chocolate milk. They were seen for the last time driving off towards Yuba County. The next morning, it was obvious that something was wrong when none of them had returned home. Jack's mother reported them missing and a massive search was underway. It wasn't long before Forest Services found his car stuck in the snow in Plumas National Forest. This was on February 27th, but the strange thing was that this area of California was 50 miles off of their route, literally in the opposite direction of home, but the car was the only sign of them. There was no evidence that any of the men had been there at all. It didn't seem like they had tried to move the car. With their athletic ability, weight, and height, and the fact that there was five of them, they would have had no issue removing the car from the snow where it was stuck. There was still a quarter tank of gas and a bunch of maps in the glove compartment. The keys were also missing. Of course, police tried to search the surrounding areas, but a winter storm put their efforts on hold. This is when someone named Joseph Scons told a wild story from the night they vanished. Joseph was driving home from checking on his cabin when his car also got stuck. He suffered what he claimed to be a heart attack when he tried to get his car free from the snow. He said that he collapsed in pain and couldn't move. Then at 11:30 p.m., he saw headlights. Several men got out of the car, but there was also a woman with a baby. He tried to get them to help, but they simply vanished into the night. A couple of hours later, he saw flashlights, but no one ever came to help. No one knows for a fact if that was the Yuba County Five, because that's what they're being called now, but it makes the most sense. It took months for anyone to find out what happened to the five young men. It was June 4th when two explorers found a ranger trailer 20 miles from where the car was found. Inside was the body of Ted Weir on a bed. His feet were frostbitten and he had a long beard. Like, he didn't have one before.
What?
This means that he was probably alive for several months in that trailer.
Whoa. That's actually insane.
Because I feel like it takes men like a hot minute to like grow a full long beard.
Yeah, it's bizarre. There was also a locker in the trailer that had enough food to feed all of the missing men for more than a year. Propane tanks and matches were also located in another nearby shed. Jack and Bill were found a few miles away. Their bodies had been eaten by wildlife. Jack's spine, shoes, and skull were found spread around 2 miles away from the trailer. Gary Mathias was never located, but his shoes were found in the trailer. Something that's important to note about Gary is that he was legally blind without his glasses, an army veteran, and had schizophrenia.
I'm looking at their missing persons report because I just kind of wanted to put faces to the names. And they're all, I mean, like you said, they're all like 29, 24, 32, like they're young guys. They're all like, weirdly enough, they're all around the same height, except for Theodore, who was about 6 foot. And then the shortest was Jack, who was 5'9". But it's just random that all five of these guys, because they all look very healthy. They all look like, I don't know, they just look like capable dudes that would just know how to get out of a situation.
Yes, especially since Gary was a veteran.
Yeah, like his military photo is the one that they put on his missing persons flyer. So that makes me wonder, because he would, if anyone would know like what to do, I feel like he definitely would know, like if the car broke down or something of that sort. So maybe that's why they found food. Like maybe they thought there was this massive storm and they just wanted to wait it out, but it ended up being longer. I guess I'm not sure. It just doesn't really make any sense.
But the beard.
Yeah, I mean, they've been there for a hot minute. So how is that even possible? This just is not making a lot of sense.
No, there are theories, okay? So first, the concept of going missing really freaks me out. Both Stephen and these five men disappeared in snowy climates, and I wanted to bring something up about this case. The last thing Stephen remembers is being cold and scared of being lost in the frozen darkness forever.
Okay.
Ominous, but okay.
Yeah.
I think that there's something to that. And of course, we don't have the five men from Yuba County able to give an account of what happened to them, but there's something to the onlooker seeing the woman with a baby accompanying them, even though her body was never recovered with the others. The weird behavior is another point. These men died so close to food and shelter, and they were resourceful enough to have known that, yet something strange happened and they all starved and froze to death.
Yeah, that part doesn't make sense to me. Like, I feel like there's a massive hole in the story that's just hasn't been uncovered yet.
Yeah. So the woman is the thing that confuses me.
Yeah, she's random. She has a baby.
Yeah. Like, so we don't have any witnesses for Stephen's initial blip from existence, but what if there's something to the woman with the baby?
Was she seen before?
Well, around the world, there is a spirit called the Woman in White. You might also know her as La Llorona.
Yeah, yes, I do know of this suspect.
In Brazil, she is a woman who was starved to death by her husband because he believed that she was in love with a slave. She was only fed meat from his corpse in a soup.
Oh.
Very rational response to that.
I did not know that that was the lore behind her. Holy God.
She's called the Dama Branca, and another origin speaks to young women who were murdered by their fathers or husbands in order to protect the dignity of the family name. She is seen wearing a white nightgown. In Canada, she was a woman who threw herself off of Montmorency Falls after her fiancé died fighting in the Battle of Beauport. Her apparition can be seen around that area wearing a white dress. But she isn't always just a ghost. In some countries, she's a curse. There are several stories surrounding people going missing or turning up dead in areas haunted by a white lady. There is a stretch of road in England between Beeford and Brandon Burton where a lady in white has been spotted and caused multiple deaths. In one instance, a man on a motorcycle was driving down the road in the evening and picked up a pretty hitchhiker. He noticed that she was wearing all white as she climbed onto the back of his motorcycle. After a few miles, she just vanished.
I feel like a woman in white is in every ghost story ever. Like if you go to any haunted building, they're like, yeah, there's a woman in white and she's said to be like a bride or a woman or like an angered, revengeful woman spirit or something of that sort. Or she's like nice and she's just like watching. But there's, I feel like there's always a woman in white. So I don't know why though. Why are they always in white?
It's the paranormal personification of grief.
That's fair.
Another story speaks to six people in a car fatally crashing into a tree. Some people speculate that it's because they picked the lady in white up as a hitchhiker.
So in some places, she's like a really bad omen.
Yeah. Or a killer.
Yeah.
Spirit, I guess.
A killer ghost.
And then there's a castle in Switzerland that is plagued by a murderous lady in white. Raoul Buell Castle in Geneva has a grave story about a woman who was a wife to the knight Humbert de Coulox. I totally pronounced that wrong. It was under his rule that the castle was built. When she could not bear him a son, he shunned her. It isn't clearly stated that she died due to this, but most white lady stories center around a suicide linked to heartbreak or infidelity or a murder linked to the latter.
I love that he blamed her for something that was out of her control.
Yeah,
I
right?
love that. That's great. Thank you. Just check mark for history, you know, just keeping it the same over and over again.
She likes to appear on Christmas Eve, on a new moon or full moon, where she will kill people who cross her path. She is also linked to various mysterious disappearances, those of which I couldn't verify with actual stories.
Ah. We love that.
They've been lost to the annals of time.
I just don't think ghosts could actually kill people, but I could see them.
You just don't think ghosts.
Well, that's fair. I just don't think ghosts. Period. End of discussion.
Ghosts? I don't think so.
I just do think it's interesting that there's such a broad like spectrum with the woman in white. She could either be someone that's totally yep. harmless and she's just there watching, or she's in the back of your car trying to murk you. So, I mean, there's that. It's like Bloody Mary. Some people spin her off as like just a person just trying to be like, hi. And then other times she's like going to slit your throat, you know? It's very different. She just can't pick what she wants.
Well, let's get into La Llorona because her infamous story has circulated in Mexico, Venezuela, Guatemala, and America. She is seen as a harbinger of death and walks around wailing loudly. The story goes that she drowned her children in a nearby river. Some sources claim that it's because her husband cheated on her, while others claim he died. There are also some accounts where she had postpartum depression.
Oh, okay.
I think that there are multiple spirits who can be considered La Llorona out there. Mm-hmm. There doesn't have to just be one story, but that's beside the point. It is said that if you bother her or follow her cries into the woods late at night, something bad will happen, aka you'll die.
All right, so just don't follow the random cries of, you know, agony into the woods. Or
correct.
Near water, because I feel like I've heard that she lurks in like rivers, like near rivers, and she'll try correct. And drown you.
Correct.
See, I know some stuff. I know some spooky stuff.
You do?
I do. Well, you know what's interesting is this is such a similar legend to Slaughterhouse Canyon in California.
Hmm.
Very similar. She drowned her kids because the husband never came back. He was like a minor. And she drowned her kids and you can hear her wailing in the canyon.
Interesting.
So I wonder if that's their version of this.
That one, I'm like, a wailing woman, is that not just wind trapped in a tunnel, you know, like the crevices of the...
I mean, there's even animals. There's animals that sound like screaming women.
Yeah.
So it's like, did you just hear one of those?
Wind sounds get really distorted in the butt crack of canyons.
The butt crack of canyons. I was thinking of like a coyote.
Oh, okay.
You're like, nah, down the booty crack of canyons. I hear the wind.
Now, let me be clear when I say this is just a way to connect all of these stories. We will never know what Steven saw or if he was with anyone prior to him vanishing. For decades now, he has been unwilling to speak with press or any reporters about his experiences.
Good for him.
But he does confide in his close friends and family. Some people believe that aliens are ever so present in the Michigan Triangle and they are responsible for the disappearances. While some abduction survivors, hard quotations on that, claim to see animals, bald men, children, or just orbs of light, there is always one constant in their story. they were all missing time. Typically, these people return to the same place where they were taken, while some never return at all. I gotta say, bald men are pretty creepy. They scare me.
Bald men scare me. Or they're really mean.
So do children.
Or they're mean.
True.
Sorry to the nice bald men.
Pookie.
I'm sorry.
Sorry you don't have hair, Pookie.
She's bald. She hates people that have hair.
We might go into this in another season, dedicate an entire season to this. But a lot of people suggest that the missing 411 stories are very similar. Speaking of aliens, believers in abductions and UFOs attribute 411 cases to that, because they attribute every paranormal thing to aliens. Anyways,
love that.
As they do with Stephen's case.
Oh.
So let's talk about the phenomena of the missing 411. People go missing in national, state, and recreational parks all the time, especially children. The thing that fascinates most people about 411 cases is the rate in which they occur and how they happen. Hancock House Publishers explains it like this, quote, "Nobody has ever studied the archives for similarities, traits, and geographical clusters of missing people until now." They go on to talk about how a national park ranger gave them a tip which resulted in over 4 years of professionals investigating the similarities between these stories. Stories that are pretty much copy and paste from one to the next. Experts in this investigation have also mapped out these specific disappearances as having happened on top of these weird underground cave systems. Which, I just want to acknowledge the huge divide in the internet community on the missing 411. There's a whole group that calls themselves experts that say, oh, the caves, whoa, haha. And then there's a whole group that call themselves experts that say, that's not true, this has been disproven, this is bullshit, this is so disrespectful. So, I would like to acknowledge that before going on, because we are talking about these cases as, yes, missing 411, and we're going to talk about these theories and these investigations, but not claim anything as fact.
Yeah. It's just an educational discussion. That's about it.
So without further ado, let's talk about some of the weirdest cases I've researched. A 3-year-old who is regarded as John Doe, so I'll call him John, to protect his identity, was camping when he just blipped out of existence. I know I've used this term before, but it's really the best way to describe these stories. He claimed that his grandmother, in an almost AI or robot-like state, found him, and they walked to an underground cave where she asked him to poop on a sticky paper. The boy said that she was very nice, but when he refused to do what she asked, his, quote, grandmother got angry and he saw sparks come out of her head. On top of that, he said that there were other, quote, robots there, but they were lifeless and dusty. He was found several hours later in the bushes. When his grandmother found out about what happened to him and where he was, she recalled that her and the boy's father were camping there when she was woken up in the middle of the night to a needle-sharp pain in the back of her neck. When the grandfather checked, there was a pinprick of blood coming out of that specific area.
I mean,
we're going down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole, so let's have some fun with it.
That could have been a lot of things. You're camping in the woods. Could have been a bug bite. A nasty one. Maybe? I'm trying to think of a bug bite that would make you bleed like that. Maybe she rolled over onto something. She was asleep.
Some theories about this case range from literal robots to body swapping and, again, aliens.
Huh. I mean, also,
what a figure.
Lifeless robots, probably not, but maybe lifeless human beings. Because, I mean, the cave systems, as we know, like, a lot of people do go missing in them for one reason or another. So, I don't know. That just seems a little, insane.
Now let's talk about a case that was finally released to the public after decades of the FBI harboring vital information on it. They released the case files, which include over 130 pages of documents, decades later. Pamela.
Why so long?
I don't know. Dennis and his father were camping in 1969 around Spence Field for Father's Day. Dennis was off with kids from another family they had met playing hide and seek. His dad saw him for the last time around 4:30 p.m. on June 14th. He was wearing a red shirt, so obviously it would have been pretty easy to spot him.
Yeah, bright color.
His dad really only took his eyes off of Dennis for a couple minutes before things spiraled. By 8:30 p.m., Dennis's family had hiked all over the national park looking for him until they reached a ranger station 6 miles away in Cades Cove. By the time news got out that a little boy was missing, a storm had passed through, washing away any tracks or trails that the boy might have left. 1,400 people showed up in the search part, which is significant for the area. The case went viral. For the time, that meant that across the country, news stations were covering it, and the president, Nixon, was even notified. A lot of people believed that a serial killer was at play, but the FBI disproved that theory. Something odd was discovered among the case files, though. A man involved in the search appeared in the documents as a suspicious participant. Every federal investigator on the case was skeptical of him. But the FBI also debunked this by, quote, discreetly proving that the man wasn't there at the time Dennis vanished.
Interesting.
That's a quote, discreetly. Okay. How do you prove that in a national forest?
I don't feel like you can.
No.
A national forest is dense. Like, those, you got to stick to the trails or you're going to get lost. Even experienced, like, hikers get lost and they have to be really careful about that. I mean, that's why you have park rangers constantly monitoring it. And they do their best. There's not many of them out there, but they try.
So, who knows what happened to Dennis?
They never found him at all?
No, not a trace. Just gone.
Oh, that's so horrifying. Because it could have been a number of things. Could have been an animal. He could have, like, hit his head and then an animal got to him. A person could have got to him and took him. Like, so many things. There's so many options. But I can't believe that there's just nothing at all. Not even, like, a shoe or his shirt or... That's crazy. That poor kid. Ugh.
Todd Giebe was 22 at the time of his death. He went to a party on June 12, 2005, where over 100 people were in attendance. The bonfire was held behind an apple orchard, which was surrounded by 6 miles of grass that reached a person of average height's hips. Okay, let me preface this by saying that Todd was also an avid outdoorsman and was experienced in hunting, fishing, dirt biking, and hiking.
Okay.
All things that required he be a good navigator in questionable areas and terrain.
Yeah.
He decided to walk back to his cousin's house 1.5 miles away from the party, and around 12:47 a.m., he called his friend to tell him he was going home. He, quote, had enough. At 12:51 a.m., he called a different friend and said that he was, quote, in a field before the call dropped. He then attempted twice to call the same friend back 6 minutes later. That was the last time he was seen or heard from. A 1,500-person search and rescue party with aircraft scoured the area, but they couldn't find any trace of him. Again, lift out of reality is all too fitting. It took 21 days for him to be discovered in the most unusual way. His body was standing vertically in Ovidhall Lake. This spot is around 1.5 miles away from his cousin's house. He was dead, and the people who found him were honestly perplexed. They accounted seeing his head and shoulder sticking out of the water. He was dressed in the same outfit he wore at the party with his wallet still in his pocket. His death was ruled an accidental drowning. The autopsy report furthered the mystery when no water was found in his lungs. This debunked the conclusion police jumped to because drowning victims, even after death, would have significant amount of water in their lungs and be found face down or up. But here's the thing. He had only been dead for a little over 2 days, which leaves us with the question, where the fuck was he on the other 18 days that he was missing?
Yeah. And also, vertically?
Vertically.
That's horrifying. Like, I mean, the whole thing is horrifying. But, like, how are you in a body of water and you frown vertically?
His leg, his foot, nothing was, like, anchoring him there like that. And police have since refused to further the investigation by reopening his case.
I wonder if he looked like he had been living in the woods for 18 days.
No.
Not at all?
Nope.
So where did he go?
They didn't even look into that.
Okay. I don't have an explanation because obviously I don't have any evidence in front of me, but like you're at a party, you're with a bunch of friends, you just go missing. You're found 18 days later. Oh, sorry, 21 days later. You found vertically in a lake or a river by random people. And then not only that,
yeah.
You are
lake, yeah.
You are deemed to be accidental drowning, but there was no water found in the lungs. And then on top of that, you don't look like you were surviving in the woods for 18 days because you were only dead for two. That does not make any sense. The math is not mathing.
Nope. Science not sciencing. No water in his lungs. Had been found for 2 days. Had been dead for 2 days.
I mean, I guess
no one saw him in the lake.
Not anything to go off of. So,
well, so my question is, he was easy to spot. Like, he was in the lake and no one saw him there. So where was he for the other, like, few days that he was dead? Who put him in the lake?
And how was he vertical and not anchored to anything? Because, like, I feel
I don't know.
That's just...
It's bizarre.
Was it a lake or a river?
A lake.
Okay. So, I mean, the water could have been not moving. Because I was in, like, a river, that girl is moving. But a lake, still, it moves.
Well, even then, you're not going to... You're not going to vertical, you know?
No, you're going to be horizontal.
Like, you're standing.
Yeah. Like, if... Usually floating, but you're going to be horizontal.
Yeah. Or sunken.
Yeah. Depending on how you drowned. That doesn't make sense at all, in the slightest. I feel like a person is involved. Like, I don't know why. I just feel like there's something going on. He could have drowned, but with no water in the lungs, there, I feel like there would be at least a little bit. And the whole vertical thing just throws me off. So they just closed his case and just didn't look into it at all. I just wonder what they would have gone off on, like, or gone off of, because there's not really anything. He wasn't seen with someone before he left, like, nothing.
He was actually considered the first victim of the Smiley Face Killer, even though I don't really believe that one.
I've heard about the Smiley Face Killer, but I don't know about that. I mean, there's just not anything to go off of, so I don't really have anything else to say because I just don't understand. Which is the point of this, but, like, still, I just don't know. I don't know what.
Lastly, I want to talk about Riker Webb from Montana. He was 3 years old when he was left unattended outside with his dog. When his parents went to check on him, he was gone. Bad weather inhibited authorities' ability to properly search for him, but 2 days later, he was found in a shed 2 miles away from his house. How a three-year-old survived for 2 days in the Montana wilderness without food, water, or proper shelter is absolutely beyond me. Some reports claim that he was wearing different clothing when he was found. With all of that in mind, before we talk about the cave systems, I just want to... The reason I'm shortening Riker Webb's case is because TikTok has had a field day destroying that poor boy online, saying, oh, he's a skinwalker. Oh, he's fake. Not everything is a skinwalker. Thank you. End of discussion.
Yeah, I know exactly.
If there is a case, a little boy goes missing, he's found relatively unharmed 2 days later, you let that boy live his life.
Yeah.
You don't fucking spread rumors and he's a person. Like, shut the fuck up. Anyways, I digress.
Yeah, people went wild with that. I remember seeing that kid's face and I was like, first off, how would you look if you went missing
in
the woods?
Trauma.
They were like, well, his eyes are so big. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, he went missing in the, like, some of the scariest national park, like, dense woods ever. You would look the exact same as a grown person. Like, he was found, thankfully. Leave him alone and let him have his fucking peace. Jeez. Out here. Gosh.
Well, we need to talk about the cave systems and check to see if they run under the area that Stephen vanished.
Mm-hmm.
So I analyzed a map, and two maps were analyzed, the North American cluster map, which documents all of the missing 411 cases, and the cartographic analysis map, which documents the cave systems in America. Some critics of the theory simply chalk of the similarities to confirmation bias, or the fact that every national park has a high density of underground caves. This does not change the fact that the maps have an eerie similarity and that a lot of cases consist of missing time and reports of an underground cave system. Some questions we've been getting about Stephen's cases in those 15 months, how did no one recognize him? While the 1970s was an easy time to disappear without recognition, it still makes you wonder.
The 70s was crazy. It was just a wild ride. Wild. Everyone was hitchhiking. There was like a weird influx of cults. I mean, we got everything. Drugs.
Well, his case hit national headline, and it's nearly impossible for no one to say, hey, that's the guy from the news. We've seen in other memory lapse cases that the recognition of the missing person is common. We'll be going over these cases around episode 6. But the U.S. cave map shows some cave systems right between Saugatuck and Benton Harbor. It's entirely probable that this could be a direct correlation to how Stephen blipped out of existence. To further the weirdness, Stephen wrote a book in his adult life about the multiverse and our ability to jump or quantum leap from dimension to dimension. His book is a mathematical breakdown of this theory. That leads me to the conclusion that something else might have been going on. Am I crazy for jumping to that or what?
If there's a lot of mystery in something, it's common to just maybe think that there's some type of supernatural aspect to it, even though there might not be, but it's hard to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense. So, you know.
Are there portals hidden among us in America or around the world? Can we time travel or leap to different dimensions by accident? Is the government responsible for these missing people? Next episode, we're going to dive headfirst down the rabbit hole of government experiments, ley lines, portals, time travel, maybe aliens again. And I have to say, I read a bunch of unclassified CIA documents. And after that, I needed to like scratch my brain with a stick.
Clean it.
Because I just have to say, the CIA and these Freedom of Information finally declassified these documents.
It's a lot.
If they were to describe this white wall, they would be like, the wall is white, but in figure, it is gray with blots of further white and deeper grays. The wall is also standing upright with white and further grays and deeper colors. While the wall might be white, there are cracks. But like, they would never say the wall was actually white. I'm just like improvising. I'm like
beat around the bush.
The color, the question was, what color is the wall? Why are you saying it's standing upright and there are cracks in it? Like, I don't give a fuck.
It's like all the shades in Home Depot. No, that's not white, it's eggshell. No, that's not white, it's snow. Eggshell. No, it's just a cooler toned white. Like, no, that's abominable snowman. It's my dining room. color. Abominable snowman eggshell.
Well, anyways, we're going to close the case file for today. Pamela can't do it because she got shot.
Dead.
Anyways, don't forget that episodes come out every Wednesday. We are sorry that we didn't release one. We felt like it was disrespectful to the process of the election. But we're back and we're here. And yeah. Anyways, I love you guys.
Love you.
We should check to see if there are any new reviews. I don't think we have any new ones.
Oh, I haven't looked actually.
We'll continue that next time. Love you guys. Bye.